If you'll open your Bibles to Job chapter 2, we want to begin there in this second look at why bad things happen to good people. Job had everything that could possibly go wrong. We always talk about worst case scenarios, realizing that that rarely, if ever, happens, and yet with Job it did. In one day, he went from a millionaire to a mendicant. And even worse, he went from a proud father of 10 healthy, happy children to a grief-stricken individual planning 10 funeral services. His health failed him. He was in agony. He hurt from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. His wife abandoned her faith, and she invited him to join her. The change in his lifestyle was unbelievable. In chapter 19, verse 16, he said, "I summon my servant, but he does not answer." He had a house full of servants at one time, and now he's reduced to abject poverty. There was a change in his health, a loss of energy. In chapter 19, verse 20, he said, "I'm nothing but skin and bones." There was a change in his relationship. Half of those who had worked for him are dead now. The ones who were nearest and dearest to him are gone. And the worst part is there is no end in sight. You know, we always talk about the patience of Job. Tonight we're going to talk about the impatience of Job. Because if you have ever read this book, and I just suspect that a lot of Christians know more about Job from hearsay than from actually reading through the book. If you've ever read the book, you know that it's not all patience. In chapter 2, we're introduced to Job's three dear friends who travel great distance to come and be at his side during this difficult time. Wyman introduced us to those three friends. They're there in verse 11. Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, the Shuhite, and Zophar, the Naamathite. When they heard about his troubles and all that had come upon him, and they set out from their homes, and they met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. Let me just tell you this, and I'm going to talk to two different groups tonight. I'm going to talk to those of you who have friends who are going through prolonged suffering, and then I want to talk to some of you who are here tonight who are going through prolonged suffering. Let me talk first to those of you who know someone who's going through this. The most important thing that you can do when you hear about some friend of yours who has suffered a tremendous loss or who has been diagnosed with a terrible illness or some tragedy or going through a divorce or whatever it is, the most important thing you can do is to make immediate contact with that friend. And I know a lot of people say, but I just don't know what to say. Simply touch base. Let them know you love them. Let them know you're praying for them. You don't have to say any more than that. Let them know you're aware of their loss and their tragedy and their suffering, and assure them of your friendship and your willingness to be there for them. That's all you have to do. Look in verses 12 and 13. These men came from a distance. It says in verse 12, when they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. He had been so reduced by this tragedy. They began to weep aloud. They tore their robes. They sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. I have had any number of people who are in intense agony tell me that there are two kinds of people that usually come to your aid. There are those who will sit there and they will babble and utter pious platitudes and try to offer explanations. And then there are those who will just come and sit there in silence and be your friend. And you know who they want? The one who will just come and sit in silence, be a friend. These men sat for 7 whole days, and they were just there with their friend, weeping with those who weep. I had a good friend in college, and he went into ministry, and he got involved in an addiction. It all came out. He lost his job. He lost his health. He almost lost his marriage. And he said that one of his closest friends back in the college days was halfway across the country, and as soon as that friend heard about it, he got on the next plane, flew all the way out to Dallas, Texas, rented a car, drove over to his house, and there he was, broken and alone. And that friend came in, and he said, he put his arm around me, and he prayed with me, and he cried with me, and then he drove back to the airport and got on the plane and went home again. He said, I'll never forget that. No, just being there for a friend who is in prolonged suffering is so important. Now, Job initially responded in a magnificent way to this tragedy. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And we think, boy, what faith. And it was. But as time went on, Job changed. Look in chapter 3. After this, Job opened his mouth and he cursed the day of his birth and said, may the day of my birth perish. In the night that it was said, a boy is born, that day may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine upon it. May darkness and deep shadow claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm its light. That night, may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered in any one of the months. Strike it from the calendar. Now, he's going to go on like that for a whole chapter. Just a tirade. Cursing the day he was born, wishing he had never seen the light of day. What happened to those earlier affirmations of faith? What happened to that patience of Job that he began with? Well, he's discovering now for the first time the reality of prolonged pain. Folks, let me tell you, it's different to have something go wrong that you can get over in a week's time, and it's an entirely different story to have a loss or a tragedy in your life that will impact you for years, if not for a lifetime. He discovers this, and anybody here tonight who has battled a long-term illness or who has lost a child or a loved one, anyone here who has gone through a divorce, anyone here who has had a child break your heart, anyone here who struggled with an addiction, or anyone here who's been through any kind of mental or emotional struggle, you're dealing with long-term issues, and those are different from short-term ones. Look in verse 11 here of chapter 3. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Did you know it's not uncommon for people in prolonged suffering to wish they were dead, to have suicidal thoughts? Look in verse 26. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil. Job is expressing the pain and the anguish of the soul. Well, his friends were troubled when they heard him talking like this. And this is a good lesson for us to learn. When there are people that are in intense, prolonged pain, they're going to say some things that are troubling in nature. I don't like to hear people express suicidal thoughts. I don't like to hear people curse the day of their birth. And so these friends respond. And Eliphaz was the first one. Now, this is a lesson for us tonight, mostly in what not to do. Eliphaz was not a very good friend. What he said was less than helpful. Look what he said here in chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. Then Eliphaz the Temanite replied, and he begins very well. He's complimentary, he's nice, he's ingratiating. If someone ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? But who can keep from speaking? He says, we've got to say something, Job. Think how you have instructed many, and how you have strengthened feeble hands. Your words have supported those who stumbled, and you have strengthened faltering knees. But now trouble comes to you, and you are discouraged. It strikes you, and you are dismayed. Should not your piety be your confidence, and your blameless ways your hope? Consider now. And oh, this is where they stabbed him in the back. Consider now, who being innocent has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? Job, if you'd been living a good life, these things wouldn't have happened to you. We know that good people don't have tragedies befall them. Now, can you imagine anything worse to say to a man who is suffering like Job is suffering? They're putting the blame on him. This friend Eliphaz is really not much of a friend at all. He begins with a compliment, but then he tears into him. And he gives him a terrible implication here. Look in verse 8. He says, "As I have observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it." Job, you deserve what you're getting. That's what he's telling him. You must have done something that caused God to allow this to happen in your life. And he's almost asking him, Job, is there something you want to tell us? Look in verse 17 of chapter 4. Can a mortal be more righteous than God? Can a man be more pure than his maker? Boy, he's just preaching to him, and he's doing it in a way that couldn't be more hurtful. The only thing worse, he ends the chapter with a bunch of sanctimonious, pious words. Look what he says at the end of his speech in chapter 5, down in verse 25. He says to Job, "You will know that your children will be many and your descendants like the grass of the earth. You will come to the grave in full vigor like sheaves gathered in season." Everything's going to be okay, Job. You'll have more children later on. It'll all be okay. You'll get over it. You'll be fine. Boy, you don't tell someone who's lost 10 children it's all going to be okay, because it's not. I remember some good friends of ours. He was an elder in Memphis, and his wife lost a child. The child was born and barely lived a few hours and died. And she was absolutely brokenhearted and just wept uncontrollably. And he said he sat at her hospital bed and tried his best to console her. And he held her hand and he said, "We're going to have more. We're going to have more." And he said, finally, she looked at him and she gritted her teeth and she said, "I don't want more. I want this one." It does no good to tell people they're going to have more and it's going to be okay and everything's going to work out fine. When you're in pain, that's the last thing you want to hear or need to hear. Job was so frustrated, and he tried to let them know the enormity of his pain. You know, in the hospitals today, nurses will ask a patient, "Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10. How bad is it?" And a patient is able to share somewhat of the pain by using that 10-point scale. Listen to what Job says. Look in chapter 6, verse 1. Then Job replied, "If only my anguish could be weighed and all my misery be placed on the scales, it would surely outweigh the sand of the seas. No wonder my words have been impetuous. The arrows of the Almighty are in me. My spirit drinks in their poison. God's terrors are marshaled against me." He says, "You men have no comprehension of the burden I'm bearing. There's no way I can express to you the load that I'm carrying." He goes on in verses 15 and 16. "But my brothers are as undependable as intermittent streams." He says, "Guys, you're not helping me. You're not helping me one bit by these words you're giving." He says, "As like streams that overflow when darkened by thawing ice and swollen with the melting snow, but cease to flow in the dry season." He said, "I'm in the dry season, and I'm parched, and I'm in need of getting some refreshment, and you're giving me nothing." Well, his second friend, Bildad, decided he would chime in, and he offers even worse advice. What he says is absolutely horrible. Look in chapter 8, the first four verses. Then Bildad the Shuhite replied, "How long will you say such things? Your words are a blustering wind. Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert what is right? When your children sinned against Him, He gave them over to the penalty of their sin." Oh my goodness. He says, your kids got what they deserved. God punished them for their own sins. I don't know how Job could sit there and listen to that. I don't know how he could take that in his pain and anguish. And then they encourage him, Bildad encourages him, "Job, you need to confess your sins. You must be even more wicked than your children." And Job despondently responds, and he tells what he feels like. And this is as honest an assessment of someone in deep pain as anything on the pages of Scripture. Look in chapter 9, verse 11. He says of God, Job says, "When He passes me, I cannot see Him. When He goes by, I cannot perceive Him." He said, God's gone. He's not in my life anymore. He says, "I don't feel His presence. I feel like He's abandoned me. I just feel totally alone." Well, his friend Zophar decided he would help the issue. And in chapter 11, Zophar comes in. And listen to what Zophar has to say. Then Zophar the Naamathite replied, "Are all these words to go unanswered? Is this talker to be vindicated? Will your idle talk reduce men to silence? Will no one rebuke you when you mock?" He says, "Job, you're just mocking, and we're not going to sit here and take it. We're going to straighten you out." Verse 4, "You say to God, 'My beliefs are flawless, and I'm pure in your sight.' Oh, how I wish that God would speak and that He would open His lips against you." He said, if we could just call God to witness, God would straighten you out. He would tell us what your secret sins are. He went on to say that these terrible things don't happen to righteous people. In chapter 12, poor Job, in absolute exasperation, responds to Zophar. And he says, verse 2, chapter 12, verse 2, "Doubtless you are the people, and wisdom will die with you." He's just not going to even argue with them anymore. Oh yeah, you're the repositories of all the wisdom of the ages. I mean, whatever you want to say, say it. I'm not going to argue with you anymore. Now, we've just looked at some of this story and the way people have responded to a man in intense pain. And I want to use this as an object lesson of what not to do, but I want to talk to those of you who are dealing with prolonged pain and suffering at this point. And I want to help draw some lessons from Job out of this for you. Number one, when you go through prolonged pain, most of your friends will not continue to sympathize with you. Now you need to know that. Most of your friends will not continue to sympathize with you. You'll have a few who will stick with you all the way through. But a lot of them just won't. We call it compassion fatigue. Those who volunteer and help with tornado relief and all. I mean, after you have about 3 tornadoes in a row, I mean, people get weary of going in and helping, and they just get fatigued. And there are people who just, they have a real short ability to help someone who's going through crisis, and they don't know what to do. And so let me just encourage you, if you're going through prolonged pain, be tolerant of those people, because they really don't understand. They really don't. Paul was in prison, and Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:15, and he said, "Everyone in the province of Asia has deserted me, including Phygelus and Hermogenes." They've all abandoned me. They just weren't able to stick with Him through all those hardships. Jesus in the garden had to admonish His disciples, and He did that fruitlessly. "Can't you just stay awake for 1 hour and watch with me?" One counselor gave this advice. He said, your friends are going to be like a deck of cards that's been reshuffled. And some of those at the back that you had not regarded as really close friends, they're going to come up to the very front of the deck. And they're going to surprise you by how they're going to be able to help you. And some of those you relied on the most that were on the top of the deck, they're going to end up being way back, shuffled among the cards. But he also said, if you're patient, those at the back will eventually come back to the front again. And so if you're going through pain and you feel disappointed by your friends, know this. There are people who just don't understand. They've never been there. They don't relate. They don't know. And then there are others that are just not gifted with mercy. And they just don't know how to respond to people who are in pain. And there are those who say, I just don't know what to say and I don't know what to do. And you never hear from them at all. Develop new friends. Find those who do understand. And you know where you're going to meet them? Most likely in a support group of others who've been through the same kind of pain that you're suffering. So the point is, don't expect more of your friends than they're capable of delivering. Job had these friends. They obviously loved him. They traveled a great distance. They sat with him for 7 days, but they didn't understand. I hope at the end of the day, Job could forgive them and they could come around and they could still be friends. There's a second lesson, and this is just a two-point lesson tonight. And it's this, when pain is prolonged, God will often seem distant and silent. As you read through the rest of the book of Job, that's his big complaint. Where is God? Why won't God answer me? Why won't God show me why this is happening? Why won't God give me some kind of a clue? Look over in chapter 23, down in verse 3. There in chapter 23, down in verse 3, Job said, if only I knew where to find him. If only I could go to his dwelling place. God, where in the world are you? I'm heartened to know that in his saner moments, in his clearer moments, Job still responded with faith and trust. Back in chapter 19, verse 25, Job said in that famous statement that we put to song, I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in the end, he will stand upon the earth. You know, one of the most difficult tests of faith is to wait for God when you don't have any answers, when you are in God's waiting room and he won't see you. I read about a father whose little girl died of leukemia. And as she was battling that horrible disease, she was in intense pain. And through the tears, she asked her dad, Daddy, how long will this leukemia last? And he said, sweetheart, he said, I don't know. He said, we're doing everything we can. And the doctors are doing everything they can to help you through this. And she said, Daddy, will you ask God, how long will this last? And he said, I'll pray for you, sweetheart. And the next morning, he said he came in and the little girl looked up at him and said, Daddy, when you ask God how long this is going to last, what did he say? What do you do when you don't know the answers? When the heavens seem as brass? Let me tell you, there's a big difference between God's absence and God's silence. And don't confuse those two. Among the Native Americans, especially in the eastern part of this continent, they had a rite of passage for 12-year-old boys. And there were several things they did, but one of the things they did was to leave that young boy alone in the woods overnight. They would blindfold him and take him out and sit him by a tree. And he knew the dangers. He knew there were bears and panthers and snakes and creatures that hunted during the night. And he would hear all those sounds through the night. But he had to stay there at that tree and not leave his post. And it was not until morning light that he was allowed to take off the blindfold. And it was a terrible night for these young 12-year-old boys as they moved into manhood. But when the dawn finally came and they undid the blindfold, they saw that their own father was sitting just beside them with weapon in hand. And I know that there have been many a dark night of the soul where we felt all alone, but where our Father in reality was there, ready to protect us and assist us. Let me tell you a verse that anyone who's going through prolonged pain needs to memorize. It's Deuteronomy 31:8. Deuteronomy 31:8. The Lord Himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Don't doubt in the dark what God has told us in the light. I pray that when our dark days come, and they come for everyone, that we will be able to move through this and affirm in the end, as Job did. Job ends well. He never gets all the answers, but it ends well. In spite of his despair and tears and frustration, he makes it through the storm. Boy, what a great example. I'm so glad that this book is in our Bible. And so as we go through the storms of life, I hope we can emulate Job and his example. And I hope especially that each one of us will be much better friends than those three men who came to comfort but ended up tormenting that poor man with their advice. Tonight we're going to sing a song, and we always encourage people, if they're not Christians, to respond in faith to become a Christian. But tonight especially, we want to just encourage anyone who's here who needs prayer. If you're going through a difficult time, we want to be better friends than those men were. And we want to provide comfort and strength. If you need prayer tonight, this is a perfect time for us to end this evening by praying for those we love and care for. If you need to come, won't you do that right now while we stand and sing?
Wandering from the fold of God.